Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&Ds for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button.
I've known many evil places in my time, but this realm, called Barovia, is among the most dangerous. A man could drown here, though he wouldn't need any water to do so. This place is ruled by a man, no, more a creature actually, known as Strahd von Zarovich. It is said that anyone who can slay him will be set free. If they don't die in the attempt, of course.
Pip! You recognize what this is?
Yeah.
It's a force elemental.
Oh, okay.
It's following you.
Fabulous.
Okay. Can I pick up the corpse of Lady Watcher, smash out the window, and then climb, instead of leaping out, climb up the side of the house?
As you slip out the window, mm-hmm. Lady Watcher is a lot heavier than you imagine.
I let go of her and climb.
You start sprinting over the roof?
Yeah.
You're gonna start climbing down the other side?
Yeah, that's my plan.
There's a chimney.
Oh, I'll go down the chimney then.
You slide down the chimney and get stuck.
Come on.
Halfway down.
Come on.
Something grabs your feet.
Muriel?
Yes, it's me.
Okay, pull me down, pull me down.
With a huge wrench, he starts trying to pull you down. The two of you, you're sitting on a pile of ash and dust.
Okay.
You are in the master bedroom.
Great. Okay. Hey, I got her. She's outside, though. I tried to jump out the window.
She's outside?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Come on. Come on.
All right. You can hear wailing and then something slams, not into the door, but to the wall. And you can tell that this wall is about to buckle. Okay. There are three exits.
Uh-huh.
One is the door, which is right next to where that wall is buckling.
Mm-hmm.
There is a window and there's the chimney.
Mm, okay.
Muriel looks at the window, looks at you, and she says, I can fly.
You're the one who needs to get to the body. Go.
All right. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And then she grabs some furniture, throws it at the window, and then turns into a raven and flies out.
Okay.
Where are you going? Never mind.
The wall
Pip.
Buckles quite a lot.
Yeah.
A couple bricks fall out of the wall, and then you see as the force elemental starts fitting itself through that hole.
Okay.
You have a moment.
Can I climb my way back onto the roof?
You absolutely can.
Thank you.
Why up? Why not climb down?
I don't know. This is crazy.
Why is he climbing up?
You climb back up onto the roof. Highs or lows?
Highs.
Highs? It starts punching through the roof again.
Mm-hmm.
This time, you're going to need to make a dexterity saving throw.
God damn it, dude. God fucking
What's
damn it.
What's your dex save?
God fucking damn
proficiency.
It. Triple. Triple that shit, dude. Triple that shit.
All right, your proficiency bonus is where? Where did I write it? I've got it here. Oh, here it is. So, oh, 4. Oh, that's really good for you.
Yeah.
All right, so it becomes 12 plus 3 for your dex plus the 2 that I wrote. You... Pip, one of the fists explodes out from underneath your feet, but you manage to roll with it. You hit your shoulder, not hard, but gently enough that you can roll with it and land back on your feet. You keep sprinting across the roof. Where are you going?
I would like to run to get the force elemental away from Muriel so she can do it.
All right.
Run
so you're
down the... If she's
All right, you can go to the north or south side then.
I'll go
because the west, you're on the east side, and the west side is where the corpse is.
South.
You go south? All right. What do you do when you get to the south side?
Can I climb down the other side of the wall?
You absolutely can.
Thank you.
All right. So do you want to go down to the floor, or there are two windows on this side?
I think going back in the house is stupid at this point, so I'll go onto the floor.
You climb right down to the bottom.
Okay.
You're at the front door.
Okay, is the elemental coming toward me?
You can hear it thrashing and smashing upstairs, but it hasn't... Yeah. Well, highs or lows?
Lows.
Lowe's, it hasn't left the house.
Okay, that's great.
Cool. It sounds like it's trying to make its way to you through the house, but it loses track of
that's
you.
That's kind of what I wanted. All right.
You could just hear it now making noise in the house.
I kind of wanted to trap it in there. Can I then, like, wheel to the right side of the... Oh, where was Lady Watcher's body? What side of the house did it left?
And the west side.
Okay. Then I'd like to wheel to the west side of the Watcher house and, like, look down to see if I can see Muriel stabbing the body.
You see the raven land, and as it lands, it turns into Muriel, and she rushes over to something that you can't see, presumably the corpse.
I got to make sure she does it right. I'll head down the side of the building to where she's at the corpse.
You see, when you get there, Muriel is wildly just stabbing at Lady Watcher's chest.
Can I, like, put my arms around her very gently and then bring it up and do it in, like, the appropriate way?
You bring it up and you bring it down with her hands, stabbing, piercing straight through Lady Watcher's heart. Almost instantly, the corpse jerks a little bit up into the dagger, and then as it falls down, you notice the storm is still happening, but that fog begins to recede.
Hearts are hard to find. I get it. Takes a bit of practice.
We have to go, Muriel says. You can still hear the elemental thrashing about.
Yeah. Let's head for the blacksmithy. I'm so fucked, dude.
As Strahd steers you gently but insistently away from the party, one figure who you had at this point not spotted, not because you hadn't been looking, but because they had been hiding. A member of the Candanese delegation stands up and moves to follow you, unbeknownst to the rest of the party, with one exception, that diplomat who you'd been speaking to. As he moves away from the Candanese delegation, he is the only person to properly clock and see as a disguise is being slowly removed. Wait, do I know you? Piran, turning back to the diplomat, says, "You don't know shit." Sit down.
All right.
Okay.
Silently. As silent as the many graves that dot their way throughout Barovia, Piran follows you.
Okay.
Cool.
Hector.
Yes.
Strahd takes you back upstairs, back to those doors with the sun inscribed upon them that you saw when you first arrived at Castle Ravenloft.
Right. Yes. The sun god, like the Morning Lord. Is that correct? This is the.
Because it does look like the sigil of the Morning Lord.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to a Penny's sigil. Honestly, kind of identical in some ways. But when you say the Morning Lord, like, Strahd...
He's like, ooh, if I noticed that, he'd be like, when I first saw it, I thought this was a sigil of a Penny. But I believe it is. This castle would predate her, or you'd have the Morning Lord. It's
God very... of the sun. Lord of light, antithesis to the wakeful dead. These gods go by many names, and there are some. Strahd gently places his hand upon the door, and as he does so, that chain with the lock unlocks and hits the ground neatly. The god goes by many names, and some may say they are all the same. Strahd gently pushes upon the door, and the two doors the sun neatly parts in half, and the two doors open to reveal a very dusty but beautiful chapel.
Back when I was, I guess, cloistered away in
the, do you step temples. Inside? Okay.
Have long debates with a friend. About the nature of gods and if they were the same or different to different faiths.
I'm looking around at all the different iconography and it all could the different pews.
It could be a chapel dedicated to Penia, just in a sect that you are unfamiliar with.
My friend would often say that the elves have something that they call the guardian of the skies, which is very similar to Penia. He would often wonder if it was not the same being, the same entity, the same thing. Many different cultures and different parts around the world. We all have a death god. we would often get into long debates of, but then again, the sun is the iconography, the design is. I'm just babbling. Sure. The design is of the Morning Lord is very, I mean, similar to the sun. How many?
Strahd from the doorway says, "This is the only holy place within Castle Ravenloft.
Oh,
I had it made specially.
You had it made?
Yes.
Huh.
It is an old memory of mine.
Right.
Hector, it is. The corners of his mouth curl into a smile. Like he understands what he is about to say, but almost as if he feels compelled to say it anyway. There is much connecting us. We are, and now it breaks into a full smile. Once again, he knows exactly what he's saying, but it's like he's compelled to say it.
Mm.
We are not so different, you and I. I was once a paladin of the Morning Lord.
Oh.
I was general in a great army that fought a terrible necromancer. Not far from these lands. The battle was indecisive, but I was wounded greatly. I fled to the town of Barovia. He, Strahd, as he's been saying this, he has like a vest as part of his elaborate clothing. He unbuttons the vest and pulls back his shirt enough to show you a terrible, on his chest, a terrible scar, and he's fit.
Whoa!
We're talking eight-pack, dude.
Holy mackerel.
How good are them cum gutters?
Oh, yeah. You are good enough to eat out of.
Damn. Sluice some milk down those bad boys.
Yeah, tell you what. He pulls back his shirt to reveal a terrible scar. Three lines connected at one jagged point. You can see, when Strahd was mortal, this wound probably could have been the end of him. I fled to the township of Barovia. There, the people tended to me, saved my life. And the Vistani of these lands helped me escape. He had never entered the chapel, but he takes a step back. He says, I am lost in memories. This happens often. Please, Hector, walk with me.
Are we walking away from the chapel?
Yeah. He has not entered the chapel.
I sort of look around. I'll say like a little, not even a silent, but like a muttered, half muttered prayer to Penier, and trying like just cast light, just like at the tips of my fingers. I just want to just cast light as a little prayer to Penier, just kind of feel what's out there.
Haltingly, at first, it slowly comes to you. Not easily like it used to be, not with your every word as you were once able, but after a moment, the light of an incandescent bulb, harsh, but nonetheless illuminating, spreads out through the chapel.
It is a lot harder than it used to be. I hope I'm doing the right thing. I turn and follow Strahd.
Strahd leads you deeper into the castle. He takes you down. At first, it looks like you're maybe going back to your room, but then Strahd takes an abrupt turn, and you find yourself somewhere else entirely in the castle. You are, for a moment, struck dumb at how large this place is. You understood from a distance that it was a large castle, but to know that on an intellectual level and then to experience it are two separate things entirely, and it's staffed. It's fully staffed. You cross paths with many people, guards, servants, others, and all of whom give Strahd not a wide berth, but a lot of respect.
Okay.
People stop and wait for him to pass.
And it doesn't feel like anyone's being befuddled or like under my crew. That's the thing that's like, I think
people are here willingly.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Say,
no, yeah, it's just...
No one seems befuddled.
Yeah.
Yeah. As Strahd continues, as Strahd leads you, he continues his story. After the battle, the war continued, but I vowed to return to these lands, this place that had given me a home, and in time I did so. But while things were good for a time, while I made this place, Castle Ravenloft, named after my mother, in honor, after then in honor of my mother, things eventually grew dark. I fell in love with a woman, a local in the town, and my brother, Sergei. He had always been jealous of my prowess in battle, mm-hmm. jealous of my looks compared to his, and jealous of my connection to the Morning Lord.
Right.
Sergei plotted and schemed to take everything from me, and in his hatred, he turned many within this castle against me. On the day of my wedding to my beloved, he slew me, struck me down with a mortal blow, far greater and more hurtful on every level than the one I had been dealt in these lands. And he took... Strahd stops, places a hand on the wall, and you can see for a moment it looks like Strahd's about to fall over, topple. But he stops, rights himself, and then continues. He took my beloved in his name, forcefully. When she resisted on their wedding night, Strahd turns to you, and you can see that he's crying silently. He killed her.
I'm sorry that happened to you.
He nods. I was lost as I could be. I called out in pain and fear for the Morning Lord. But the night would not recede, and instead a different voice came to me. This I know, Hector, you are familiar with.
The voice of a friend.
Strahd gives you a very bitter smile and says, yes, the voice of a friend. It said that it would save me, keep me alive, bring life back to my beloved. And all I had to do in exchange was act as its emissary, its warden within the lands of Barovia. I agreed, not understanding the deal I was making.
I smile at that, but not a happy smile. Just a like a, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sergei had turned half the castle against me, but when I returned, what I had done turned the other half against me.
What did you do?
The only thing I could do, I took my mantle as warden of these lands, and who would not bend?
You broke.
Strahd nods. It is faster that way. As much suffering as it causes, it is the lesser of two evils, Hector. Strahd takes you down. Now, you realize you're deep in the bowels of Castle Ravenloft, in the dungeons of Castle Ravenloft.
Perhaps that is where you and I differ.
Perhaps, Strahd says. You see, you've come to one of the cells, a bit different than the others. The cells here are not luxurious, but bigger than maybe a cell that you might be used to. This cell, though, the one that you're standing in front of, is even bigger than that. You can see that there is a spider's web of chains, wicked red chains with barbs sticking out of them all throughout the cell. And in the center of this spider nest, wrapped and pierced with the barbs, quite clearly in agony, you recognize Escher.
Escher, one of your grooms?
He, at his name, Escher shifts to look at you, and some of the barbs tear through his flesh. He cries in pain. Strahd puts a hand on the bars, turns to you and says, yes, that is the name that has been given to them, is it not?
Yes, I believe so. We killed him once back in Varakai.
Yes, but a vampire must be killed twice.
So I'm led to believe. Why have you chained him up? Why are you torturing him?
Strahd seems to ignore your answer, and instead he continues, the uprising of a year ago is not the first of its kind, Hector.
I'm aware.
It is difficult to keep a grip on these lands. They resist, struggle. I try to keep as gentle a hand as possible, you understand, Hector. But you know, he says, and you can see in from the tone of his voice, you can tell that Strahd is trying to make you understand. Mm-hmm. Strahd, you don't know why, but he cares about what you think.
Mm.
And he is trying to explain himself to you. I try to use as gentle a hand as possible, but these people, they resist. They fight among themselves when there is a greater threat.
Yeah, looking at Esha, I then look and pivot and look at Strahd,
mm-hmm.
who has been our greatest threat for the longest time, and yet we still squabble amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand maybe that I don't fully believe what I'm about to say, but I say it anyway. Well, perhaps the reason why they squabble is that they don't know about the threats that are out there. I did not know about the threats upon you. I mean, yes, granted, I am not from here, but I have talked to lots of people who live here, and they are unaware of the army that is coming soon. They're not the army. They're unaware of the threats of the other realms knocking on their doors. They don't know how bad it can be. They don't know. And if they did, they should come together for the greater threat. I think back.
Maybe thinking back specifically to the Mountain Council that kicked off the season.
Yeah, I think back to Kresik.
Mm.
I think back to Kuchiri. I think back to just all the different members in our party who are just constantly at each other's throats.
Are there any members in our beautiful anti-found family that are aligned?
Gora Blushin and Tapos.
Yes, that's true.
As long as you have a bizarre fanatical devotion to one another, you can make it out.
I mean, like, even the common goal of us leaving is not the thing that binds us.
No, absolutely. We are bound by nothing. We're bound by a Taraka deck. That's what we're bound by.
By fate, I guess it is.
Oh, yeah, well.
Surely if people knew the what was out there, perhaps a unified goal would help people stop seeing the differences.
And then I look back at Esha and not really believing what I'm saying.
Because if you don't break them, you give them the choice, they fuck it up.
Strahd nods. Esha is here because he failed me.
Mm-hmm.
The deaths he inflicted, too great. His hand, too tight.
Mm.
And for a myriad of smaller infractions. As to the method, Strahd says, of his incarceration, I understand, Hector. It seems inhumane.
Yeah, it is not that different to what I looked out at my own stitched corpse, injured.
You understand, Hector, if I let him go, he would work against you, against me,
against anyone but himself.
Isn't, unfortunately, the human condition. Well, then why do you not sentence him to death? Are you keeping him here forever?
No, Hector. You say we are different. Strahd takes a step back. Let us see how different. What would you do?
I guess for starters, I wouldn't have him pierced with chains. Can you talk, Esha?
Yes!
Can you remove some of the chains?
I can. I warn you. These chains prevent his escape. I do not think he would attempt under my eye. But to loosen the chains, to loosen the grip, to stop bending and breaking, there are steel consequences. Strahd, nonetheless, gestures a hand, and the chains you see visibly loosen upon him. Esha's feet, which up until this point had been suspended in the air, slowly make their way down until the tips of his toes, then the balls of his feet, then he is properly standing. Still somewhat bound, but you can see in a lot less pain.
Okay. I mean, if you were to punish him for these wrongdoings, surely you don't need to chain him up and torture him. Leave him like a forgotten ornament. How many people did he kill?
Strahd produces a book, which I don't know if you've seen it before, but it's Escher's book.
We'll stop one.
You recognize, the book. There's maybe a little chain wrapped around the spine of the book, and you can see Escher's stopwatch is on the end of that chain. Strahd opens the book, flips through it. He says, 1,275 deaths. About as many casuals.
But how many of those deaths were under your command?
Escher was not under my command directly, Hector.
I raise my eyebrows at that. I'm like, I see.
Hector, my hand, my grip is not as iron as you think it is.
So, in Kuchery, your one of your brides, did you not have command of what she was doing to the people that were there?
No, Hector. She had instruction to keep Kuchery from revolt, from hurting themselves. I gave her as much leeway as I felt safe.
I think you didn't do a very good job there.
Perhaps, he says, you could do better.
Esha, why did you kill all those people?
Told. Esha looks at Strahd with like fear, revulsion, and maybe also in a pleading way. Told. Valakai would revolt. Needed to assert control.
Is that what you told him to do?
Strahd nods.
And you thought the best way to do that is to summon a swarm of bats.
Escher looks at you. His face snarls and fills with hatred. You could do better! With the last words, blood spittles from him onto you.
Did you not care about the people you killed? Did you not think of the lives that were lost? Did you not think of the toll that it would take?
Escher, in the most self-serving way possible, in the most woe-is-me tone that he can muster right now, looks back at you, Hector, and says,
I made no mistakes!
I summon...
Yes. Torture this man. Yes.
I don't think it's going to be torture.
I don't think it's torture, Adam.
Okay.
I summon a spear in my hand, and I like just looking at Esha. By rights, he is a murderer of a scale that is hard to comprehend. He should be put to death. I'm not an executioner. Send him to the front line. A war is coming. An army is coming. I've seen him on a battlefield. Send him to the front lines.
Strahd nods. An interesting choice, Hector. Perhaps he will flee to be a problem later, but perhaps his skill will be useful against an army that has no mind to suffer. Piran, watching from the shadows, closes as quietly as he can his little book, wraps it up, and stuffs it into his tunic. Then, Piran very suddenly wraps his hand around his mouth to gag himself and stop himself from screaming as a figure who he had not seen walks past him.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Hector, out of the darkness, a figure approaches. You see, she's short, wearing leather armor. Very clearly, from her appearance, you can tell immediately she's a vampire. Not a vampire spawn, a full-fledged, full-blooded vampire. As Strahd, as Escher, as all the others that you have seen before, powerful, extruding confidence. She has a very, you would say, maybe cheeky smile. Like she just played a very good joke on someone. She, as she approaches, bows deeply before Strahd, and standing back up, you see she goes through she was in life, you could see, she was once long ago a drow, and she goes through a rapid series of, you would know, drow sign. Drow sign is a particular form of sign language that drow developed to use to communicate with each other in places where sound is dangerous to make.
Of course.
Strahd nods, and with a flick of the wrist, he sends her away.
Another one of your brides, generals?
Strahd winces a little bit. He says, I prefer the term assistance.
Right.
Brides, grooms. It is terribly, he says, possessive.
After hearing the story of what happened, I don't know if Hector has it in him to mention brides again.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess
let's renege any time I have said that since then. And I think, general. Yeah. I'd be like, another one of your generals?
General is a good term. A bit too militaristic for my liking, but better than the previous ones. Please, Hector, would you like to return to the party, or would you prefer perhaps a quieter dining situation?
Perhaps a quieter dining situation would be nice. A lot to think over.
Much to think on. Please, he says, follow me. Pip!
Yeah.
You lean into the billowing snow and force one boot in front of the other until you reach the blacksmithy. The joined buildings of the blacksmithy and the tanner show obvious signs of bloodshed. Lots of bloodshed. Bodies lay strewn around, half buried in the snow. Their faces peering out and the pains of death throes still frozen into them. Whatever crimson-red blood that should be here has long since frozen and been washed away by the biting wind and falling cold. A battlefield of bodies who could easily be sleeping beneath white blankets. Gods, mutters Danica, this must be near all of the Burgomaster's soldiers. Glancing down, she sees the half-frozen face of Isaac, the Burgomaster's right-hand man. Iona glances behind the group, and with very understandable worry in her voice, she calls out over the wind, "We must press on, or we may as well lie down next to them." The interior of the smithy offers little more comfort. While most of the walls still stand, huge holes blown through every surface let the cold in. Here, the corpses are piled just as high. But now, their blood forms a thin sheet of ice to slip on. Shuddering from more than the intruding chill, Erwin speaks next. "Was this friend?" He looks up at half a corpse dangling through a hole to the floor above. "Or a Gogash?" Iona, glancing at a dozen thorns sticking out from walls, doors, furniture, and corpses, replies, "Probably both." The three of them carefully pick their way through the rubbish and bodies to the upper floor, and while they do so, Danica speaks, continuing an earlier conversation. "This engineer, describe him." With hushed tones, Iona explains Kuchery to Danica, who, until now, was hungry for more than Pip's version.
Fair enough.
Her expression growing darker and darker as she hears of Esmeralda's departure and Hector's deals with the engineer and the burgomaster, Alina Tomac. "Piran, I could tolerate." Erwin's voice is tired, the ache of someone who has seen this before and cannot endure it again. "But these new ones, Hector has strayed far from the path we last saw him on." His strained voice turns hopeful, though. "But perhaps this is just the night being darkest before the day." Iona, who clearly would rather not tolerate any of Hector's deals, and with a very similar tiredness, mutters, "He has stared into the abyss, but not yet stepped in." Her last words catch in her throat, though. Erwin and Danica have stopped and stand perfectly still, and now Iona sees why. Through a doorway lies the prone form of Elainiel, very motionless. Without thought, Iona rushes to her side. The two were-ravens think to stop her, but know they could do nothing. All stealth abandoned, Iona cradles Elainiel's form. "No, no, 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 no." Iona's gaze frantically searches Elainiel for signs of life. "Relax." A new voice, dispassionate and not very relaxing, speaks. "She is not dead, merely far-gazing." Pip, you're outside the blacksmithy and tannery.
Okay, I kind of slowly open the door. Oh, well, the windows are blown out, aren't they?
Yeah, there's huge holes in the wall. Okay. Forget the windows, yeah.
Well, I cautiously approach, scanning for signs of life, and then step over the threshold into the blacksmith, crossbow out.
All right, Muriel behind you, you step in and manage to keep your feet.
Okay.
Well, there is slippery. There's a thin sheet of ice made of blood all over the floor here. It is difficult terrain. You can see the smithy itself, then some common rooms. Well, not common rooms, but like a living room. There's bodies everywhere, piled upon each other, and you can see holes in the furniture, in the roof, in the walls. There's a hole into the basement below where you can see a pile of bodies has been knocked in there.
The bodies are frozen, yeah?
Yeah, okay. Half frozen, if not entirely. Pretty much, well, not pretty much, all of them look like they're the Burgomaster's men. Some of them bear obvious signs of cult-like insignia, that sort of stuff. Sure. You can see some of them are wearing, like, tongue necklaces, finger crowns, that sort of stuff. You know, the classics.
Yeah. I, like, lean up against one to keep my footing, and I say, "You know, reckon we'd be lucky enough to find a health potion or something on any of these guys?" I am on one hit point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Muriel shrugs and says,
wishful thinking. Let's keep moving.
Perhaps a Gogash has one, says maybe. With a smile.
Move deeper into the blacksmithy.
There's a set of stairs leading up, which you can take if you want.
Yeah, we'll do that.
You slowly climb the stairs, still keeping your footing. The blood pours down. There's little, like, icicles of blood from where one step hangs over the one below it, and blood has frozen as it's been dripping down.
Something really bad happened here, Muriel. Something really bad.
As bad as the downstairs are, the upstairs is even worse. The place looks like Swiss cheese. You can see through to the tannery at several moments as well. You, creeping through, hear a voice from up ahead.
Ah, you arrived.
Is he talking to me?
Yes.
Oh.
Pip.
Yes.
It's a Gogash,
right.
He says.
Okay,
you
yes.
may not be able to hear me properly.
Oh, my God.
The wind and whatnot.
Yeah, we're coming. We're coming. All right, we'll try and slide our way.
You ice skate your way, yeah.
We'll try and slip our way to a Gogash.
One of the rooms is both tannery and blacksmithy. The wall basically doesn't exist at this point. You can see on the floor... In the tannery section, there is a sigil on the floor. It bears a striking resemblance to the one where when you were here last. It's not the same sigil.
Mm-hmm.
It just has like an evocative of that one.
Okay.
You can tell that it's written in the same fell language.
Ooh, pretty naive to think we could have gotten rid of it by just rubbing out the sigil, hey? That's just remembering back all those weeks ago.
You can see in this room... are Danica, Irwin, and Iona, in addition to, Gogash obviously as well,
yeah.
But in addition, you can see Cribbit,
mm-hmm.
Marquillet,
yeah.
Keening, and Elaniel. Iona cradles Elaniel's form. You could see it's the air of, like, an animal with its, like, beloved or young or something like that. You get the impression that Iona might snarl and snap at you if you approached her right now.
I wouldn't dream of it. I wouldn't dream of it.
Danica and Irwin are standing near Keening with worried expressions on their faces. Keening, Elaniel, and Marquillet are all seemingly unconscious.
Okay.
Cribbit is near Marquillet, and you can see Cribbit has like a little sponge in his hand, which he's dabbing on Marquillet's head.
Cribbit, I approach Cribbit.
Well, well, well.
Yeah. Put up a finger to be like, don't shut up.
If it is not this one with stories for his good friend.
You'll get your stories once you tell me what's going on, Cribbit.
Cribbit looks around. Everyone looks at Cribbit. Cribbit looks at you.
Okay, Cribbit will tell. This one, Cribbit gestures to Keening, thought that these ones, and he does a big like circle like us, would be able to put a person who people get mad when Cribbit says name.
Right, yes.
Would be able to put back in box. Someone maybe can tell in other place. People not to explain this to Cribbit properly. You get the impression, actually, I don't need a roll for this. You get the impression that Cribbit found this part boring.
Yeah, I can imagine. The metaphysical machinations are not interesting to Cribbit. He's not a Wikipedia guy.
Maybe actually he's like flipping through he's got like a big book in front of him. You can see he's like reading parts of the book to you.
Yeah.
And you can see he made no notes for how this works.
Okay. Fabulous. Really good.
This one, gesturing to Keening, went in and I don't know. Bad stuff happened apparently. Elaniel got a message saying that she need to go in. Marquillet did not want her to go in alone. So those ones, gesturing to the two Dusk Elves, went in together to save Keening. That was, Cribbit counts in his head, 6 stones ago.
Okay.
You don't know what a stone is in a unit of time.
No idea. How long ago did Keening contact me? That would have been like...
About 24 hours ago.
Yeah, about a day. Okay. Does Cribbit have anything else to tell me?
Cribbit stops talking, but you can tell he's not gotten to the end.
Carry on.
Oh, question?
What's a stone?
Not the question I expect. Stone is how far.
Okay, no, I've no
How
question.
Far you throw stone, walk to pick up. In time.
I've got no questions. Carry on.
Cribbit makes a little note of you. He uses in his writing, I don't know if you've ever really inspected his writing, but he uses like a weird sort of freehand, like his own little language to write stories down quickly.
Yeah.
You can see he makes one of those little notes looking at you very intently.
Okay.
Well, when these ones, gesturing to the Dusk Elves, go in, they say, She, gesturing to Eleniel, knew somehow you coming quick, and so told me that if any more help needed, if take longer than 2 stones to come back, then...
Gods, and it's been 6.
Yes. you like this part. He writes that down.
Go on, it's good keep talking.
For story.
Keep talking.
Okay. Well, this one was told that you might need to go in as well.
That was going to be my next question. Yes. As Kirby's been saying this, I like to imagine I've been inching around to Keening's side, and then I like get down on my knees and take one of his hands. Did they tell you how to get me in there?
Yes, Kribbit says.
Okay, let's do it.
Was boring. Kribbit cut for time. Kribbit would just jump
you
to
you. You don't remember.
Kribbit would just jump to you being in there.
Yeah, right. Of course, in a story.
Yes.
But so you don't know how I get in there.
Kribbit, no.
Okay.
A Gurgash offers helpfully.
Yeah.
I can get you in there.
Great.
There is, however, one complication.
Sure, I'm not surprised. Only one?
With the ethereal. If you are these lot, he says, gesturing to the unconscious forms of the Dusk Elves and Keening, they are but far-gazing. If, well, they can still be trapped in the ethereal, though unable to return to their bodies, but they can't be killed. You would physically be coming with me into the ethereal. You can be killed, and there is much danger in the ethereal, and I fear to get to wherever they are, there will be 2 speeds. One, keeping up with me, and the other will almost certainly be death.
I like, look around. Do you see the blood waterfall out there on the stairs? Can't be any worse than here.
Very well. It's good, I think, for you to embrace your mortality.
Of course, a Gurgash. Indeed it is. I'm kind of ignoring a Gurgash. I look to Iona.
Iona looks at you. She looks down at Eleniel.
I look
down
up at you.
I will keep them safe while you are away. I will keep their bodies safe. You bring their minds back.
I will.
Pip, please. I understand that you have skin in this game as well. But you have to bring her back.
God's willing, I will. I've got their minds. You look after the meat. Okay.
She nods. She seemingly she's at a loss for words.
Yeah, well, look, me too. I can only promise her that I'll try, you know? Mm. Okay, I turn to a Gurgash. What do you need to do? What's the method here?
A Gurgash steps forward, and without asking, he just picks you up. He moves uncharacteristically fast. There would have been, for a brief moment, you're like, he could have killed me. You wouldn't have had time to bring an arm up to defend yourself. All right, the rest of you remain here. From my cursory inspection before these lot arrived, I believe the Burgomaster will soon be here, or what is left of him. You will not be able to kill him, so I suppose buy as much time as you can. Danica has enough time to say, what? And then, Pip, you are in the ethereal.
Okay.
A Gurgash steps forward, once again, as quickly as he had stepped forward to pick you up, and suddenly everything... there's no other way to describe it. You are in the ethereal plane. Things look similar but different.
Mm-hmm.
The spirits of something are important in this place. You can see the sizes and shapes of things warp to accommodate these spirits.
Mm-hmm.
There's, as well, another feature. There are many, and you could not mark them as anything else. There are many, many, many adventurers. Yeah. The ghosts of thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, stand silently and morosely. You look out the window on this room to see Valakai is full of people who tried this before you and failed.
Puts the pressure on.
A Gurgash puts you down.
Okay.
You can see there now, there is a silvery line from every body in the material connected to an ethereal version of themselves.
For the people who are not far-gazing, their ethereal form hovers just a little bit above them with that silvery line connected to them from navel to navel. Cool. But for those far-gazing, you can see there is a little line, a little silvery line just lying on the ground, trailing off into Valakai.
All right. And I imagine we follow this?
Yes. We follow this and we'll find their spirits. As I said, the spirits cannot be killed if they are, quote-unquote, slain.
Yeah, they'll just go back to their bodies.
They'll wake up. But he picks up the silvery thread.
Yeah.
If this is severed, they will be lost, perhaps forever.
Oh, okay.
They shall not wake up.
Just one big glaring weak spot on everybody.
Yes. Be careful as well to not let yours be severed. And at this point, you realize, you see there's one behind you.
Oh, okay.
You look back, and you look... And then you immediately look forward because your spirit version is your true self.
Oh, no.
And you don't need that.
I don't need that right now.
A Gogash has no silvery chain.
Oh, okay.
He's not connected to anything.
Well, I guess he's dead. Yeah. So that makes
sense. He's lost his spirit.
Yeah. And you said there were going to be dangers, a Gogash?
There will be. There are entities that hunt
right
within these lands, consume spirits, but there are sometimes entities which consume beings as well.
Right.
They are the far more dangerous ones.
I like bring out my Emmanuel de Monster and I flip to the few blank pages, or maybe not even blank pages, but blank spots that I have in the margins of the book.
You are currently in the ethereal, which is not a dark place.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So with those blank spots, I say to a Gogash, look, I like to be prepared. What can you tell me?
Well, I suppose anything that is not dead will have its own connection.
And if I sever that, they're out of there?
Yes,
okay.
But not any metal can sever this.
Oh, of course.
It must be a special magical metal, or silver can sever it as well.
I think I have a lot of silver arrows in here. Have I kept my equipment?
You're here
great
with all your
stuff.
I got
stuff. Ghost arrows, cool.
Yeah.
I've got silver arrowheads. How tough is ethereal tube?
It should not take much to sever it.
Okay.
There are, among some species, an agreement. You don't harm their silver, they don't harm yours.
Okay.
But whether or not you care is another thing.
I don't.
Certainly nothing dead will have this weakness. This is their realm. But be aware that you will still need magic to touch a ghost here. They exist not just in the ethereal, but the material as well. It's just as hard to touch them here as it is in the material.
Okay, that makes sense.
Aside from that,
physical creatures that eat beings? What of these?
Oh, I don't know their names, but they exist. I have seen them before.
Do they die like regular living creatures?
I've never had to fight them before. Okay. I usually just return to the material.
Oh, yes. Well, we don't have that liberty right now.
You don't.
Yeah, okay.
I fear, Gagash puts a hand on your shoulder. Should this happen, you will have to fight on your own.
Yeah, you will disappear straight away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
He nods. Well, good.
Yeah. You know, Gagash, in life, you were very annoying. and in death, the same, but I have to say you are a straight shooter. So, on some level, I suppose I appreciate that.
In that way, we are alike. Yeah. In life, you are annoying. Perhaps death would make you a finer companion. He moves past you.
I think death would just make me dead. I'll follow up.
Whatever.
You can see Marquillet, Elanial, and Keening. Their three threads seem to be going in roughly the same direction.
Cool.
As you step out of the building, you can see, it gives you a heart attack for a second, but you can see that there is something in the material which quite clearly can't see you, and it is following back into the building. It is, you met him, right? The Burgermaster?
Yeah.
You see what is left of the Burgermaster. Half of him is still mostly human, but like, you know how Play-Doh can get that hard, if it's old Play-Doh, it gets hard, and then when you pull it apart, it comes apart like a Stretch Armstrong? So most, about half actually, of the Burgermaster has come apart like that, and you can see a pink fleshy sack beneath. The pink fleshy sac is barbed, okay, and you can see in gaps, yeah, has teeth. Behind the Burgomaster, there is presumably what is left of his entourage.
Do I know what has happened to him?
Yes. Surprisingly, you do. He's been possessed by Father Limic.
Oh, okay.
He is, you are aware, yeah, for gods, of the concept of an avatar. Mm-hmm. The avatar is, for all intents and purposes, the god on Earth.
Yes,
it
sure
is their physical embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
He has become the avatar of Father Limic, which makes him basically, to give you an idea,
yeah,
makes him as powerful as, and I'm sorry to use real world equivalent, as Jesus.
Okay. Wow.
Immediately, an avatar can't be killed. It is essentially the god, yeah, in human form.
Right.
The avatar can't be killed. It has basically infinite power. The lifetime of your allies in the material can now be measured in rounds.
Okay, Adam. Okay.